It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you for being with me this morning. I'm going to start with a story that broke late on Wednesday in Chicago of a coyote attacking apparently a five-year-old boy in Lincoln Park. Obviously, there'll be more details that come out about this, but I hope to get Dr. Stan Gillard, who's the premier coyote specialist in the world, particularly on urban coyotes and coyote-human interactions, on the air. We will do that. Unfortunately, he wasn't available right now. But it is a story that merits consideration and also concern. One of the things that's been clear is that coyotes are becoming increasingly habituated to humans. And we know they're in our midst. In every city virtually now in North America, coyotes have found a way to live. They are all over Chicago. They're all over Milwaukee. They're all over Minneapolis. Virtually anywhere you're listening this morning, you probably have coyotes in your midst. They historically have not been aggressive towards humans. They run the other way. But as they become more in contact with humans, they are losing their fear. And a coyote can get rabies. It can have distemper. It could be hungry. It can be sick. And this five-year-old boy was bitten in the head numerous times by the coyote. So it is something that, as we have urban wildlife, which Dr. Garrett will talk about when we can track him down, urban wildlife in our midst, there are going to be conflicts. And in an urban environment, coyotes are at the top of the food chain. So in mammalian, in the animal world, we have goodness knows how many raccoons living in urban areas. We have feral cats. All these animals carry diseases. These animals increasingly come into conflict with humans, and the result is not a good outcome. But an aggressive coyote is an anomaly. It is not a common occurrence. It certainly is something, though, that is increasingly occurring, even though it's rare, because of the number of coyotes and their interaction with humans. And we certainly have many stories of coyotes taking dogs and cats. That's commonplace now. But a coyote attacking an individual is very, very rare. One of the stories I was going to lead with before the coyote story happened this week is the story of access. And it affects every one of us. And so for the next few minutes, I'd like to kind of walk through what's happening in America and how ultimately we might deal with this. We're looking at a situation from coast to coast, from Maine to California and everywhere in between, where the public is having difficulty accessing lands that they historically accessed because those lands now, and they were always in private ownership, but were open to the public, are now being closed to the public. There is a landmark case in California, south of San Francisco, where a beach that had been for 100 years open to the public is now closed. The individual purchased the property, and he did not feel there was any legal right to permit access to the property, so he closed access. The case has worked its way through California's court. It'll undoubtedly end up at the California Supreme Court. California, in its constitution, says that up to the mean high tide line belongs to the public. But the access to the beaches of California across private property appears to be somewhat clouded. Much as it is, we talk about access throughout the West to public lands, whether it be Bureau of Land Management lands, whether it be Forest Service lands, state lands, these lands that lay behind private lands, which historically have been accessed by the public in Maine and all on the East Coast. There is now, as the population density not only increased, the vacation traffic has increased exponentially. We're seeing all kinds of legal issues and conflicts with landowners who say, this is my property, you don't have a right to access it, even to get the public property. And the reason I'm discussing this morning is I think it's an issue that is extremely important to the future of how we treat our lands in America. One of the tenets of America has been private property rights. Also, one of the tenets in America has been access to public property. And if we as a society lock off large swaths of public land because you have to get across private land to get there, I'm not sure that we are sending the right message. And ultimately, I think it will lead to the big problems. Basically, those problems will be society saying, you know, no, we want to access our public lands, and you as an individual don't have the right to stop us. And in Montana, there was a very high-profile case involving an individual who rehabilitated a trout stream and then put a fence up across the trout stream so it could not be accessed by anyone else. Prior to his rehabilitating the trout stream, there were very few trout in it and no one bothered to fish. Once he rehabilitated the trout stream, there were lots of trout in it and people wanted to fish. The case went to the Montana Supreme Court, and ultimately the landowner lost the right to put a fence across his property because the stream could be accessed via public access. The landowner said, but there are no fish in this river before I got here. There were not any. I have spent a huge amount of money creating a great fishery. I didn't create it for everybody who visits the state of Montana or lives in the state of Montana. I created it for myself and my friends at great expense. Why do I have to open this up? And that is a common refrain throughout the West, and also common refrain in Wisconsin. There's a case up in northern Wisconsin where a long-time large property holding, which had been private, now has been forced to permit public access because it crosses a highway and the stream goes under a culvert. And the state of Wisconsin determined that if that culvert weren't there, it would be a river that could be accessed by anybody. And therefore, public access is permitted to what was for 100 years a private river. So as these cases unfold across the country, we really face a dilemma. Increasing populations looking for increasingly rare places to recreate come in conflict with landowners who want to preserve their private property rights. And at the same time, we as a society have to provide for public access and public recreation. And if we don't, we turn into a system which America will never be, that exists in Europe where everything is private and there is no public access throughout large areas. And that's never been the American way. So I think one of the challenges of the coming decade, when I look at things that are going to change in the decade of the 2020s, if you will, it is how we treat access to lands that the public either wants to access or historically has and cannot. Ultimately, these end up in the courts, but really they are the responsibility of the state legislatures. And I fear that we're coming to a point sooner than later in certain parts of the country where public access and the feeling of the public being locked out will lead to changes in how we treat a lot of land. And somehow we have to find the balance between private property rights and what I simply will call the public good, which benefits all of us, whether you own private property or whether you're just a user of public lands. We have to figure this out. We can't lock up beaches in California. We can't close off streams in Wisconsin. We can't lock off access to our coast in Maine. But at the same time, we have to respect the rights of private property owners. And as we're ever more urbanized, the ability to get permission to cross private land is definitely lessened. As we move further from our rural roots, which we certainly have as a society, we don't know people in the countryside, but we want to access the things that historically we accessed or which are really national treasures behind locked gates. So I think it's a very complicated issue. It's easy to figure it out, but I'm pretty sure, as we're talking this morning, it's an issue we're going to hear a lot about in the coming years. And I think it will come with a fair amount of legal action. And as we saw in Montana, really, really strong opinions of the legislature and the citizens, the residents of Wisconsin, of Montana, against a single landowner who was improving his private property, but he was doing so in a manner that was not on private property. So we'll have to see what happens, but these issues are going to be with us, whether it's duck hunting, whether it's fishing, whether it's hiking, whether it's boating, whatever it is. The demand for the use of public property is going to increase, and private property rights are going to have to be addressed. I'll be back with more when I come back in the Great Outdoors Show. When I come back, I want to talk about what's going on with the weirs and Asian carp in Illinois. And if I have time, I'll also talk a little bit about this change in the Pittman-Robertson Fund. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Every game, it's all on the line. Personal, one-on-one, head-to-head. You have to look for every advantage. Strength, speed, and power to win.
Dan Hampton knows when you're looking for a tough competitor, Chevy Silverado has every advantage. Silverado's Ecotec 3 V8 gets better mileage than Ford's F-150 EcoBoost V6. You heard it here. Plus, Silverado's trailering package delivers 12,500 pounds of towing capacity that guarantees hauling muscle. More power, better performance. That's the kind of advantage that wins games. And there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix Lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy than you ever imagined for less money. Your Chevy dealer knows what it takes to be a winner.
Take it from number 99. Chevy Silverado is an all-star. See your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details. Kick off the season right. Go for it.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter here on WGN, your host. Hope you're enjoying the show. Two stories I want to cover in the remaining time this morning. The first is the continued issue of the Asian carp barriers, the electronic barriers, and how to deal with Asian carp. This is an issue that we've been now living with for over a decade, actually probably close to 20 years. It's not going to go away, but what's important is where are we going? The Corps of Engineers has come up with plans that cost hundreds of millions of dollars to try to basically stop Asian carp from getting into the Great Lakes. And yet Asian carp are moving at a pace that is phenomenal. They eat nothing but algae. They're a biomass eater, if you will. And so, and their reproductive rates are phenomenal. And the pound, the tonnage that exists in rivers like the Illinois River and throughout the Mississippi alluvial plain now is extraordinary. So I was with an individual recently who said, who's in the fishing, commercial fishing business, who said one of the great impediments to controlling the Asian carp are, believe it or not, regulations on how to kill them. And he believes, and others believe, that if we really want to get rid of Asian carp, we can greatly diminish their numbers through a large amount of netting, through a large amount of basically sterilizing sections of rivers, and through electronics. Obviously, there's, if you go in and do a mass extermination of a lake which has access to a river, or you do it in a river itself, there's going to be collateral damage to all kinds of species. So the question, I guess, is what are we going to do? We know that Asian carp are invasive species. We know they're moving throughout river systems now, throughout the area between the Appalachians and the Mississippi and the Rockies. We know they're all through the Mississippi alluvial plain. We don't believe they've gotten into the Great Lakes yet, but their numbers are increasing, and the chances of them getting there, I think, are pretty good. Everyone feels they're pretty good. And the sole way to stop them appears to be these electronic barriers, which come at enormous cost, and that's just to build them, not to maintain them. As the commercial fishermen are saying, another way to do it is really to get after them and see just how much we can reduce their population levels in areas where they are moving towards accessing the Great Lakes. So a question for the Department of Natural Resources across the Midwest is, what do we want to do? There are ways to come in and virtually wipe out You won't entirely wipe them out, but virtually wipe out the Asian carp and then keep their population at minimum levels. Are we willing to do that? Are we willing in that process to greatly diminish the populations of other fish for a period of time so we can stop the advancement of the Asian carp? That's the question that the Department of Natural Resources really should be wrestling with, because the cost of these electronic barriers and the cost of maintaining them is really not something that's sustainable. With about a minute and a half left, I quickly want to talk about an issue I'm going to dive into much further next week. It is the government finding that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers was liable for flooding in Houston because of Hurricane Harvey. This is an absolute landmark legal decision and could change the very way that the Corps of Engineers and federal and state flood programs are being delivered, will be built in the future, and how monetary damages are going to be assessed. So what happened with Hurricane Harvey was huge areas ended up going underwater. These were residential areas. Huge residential areas ended up going underwater because they were behind dams that either burst or they had to release water from the spillways, which flooded these houses. It was viewed by the judge that this was a taking of the United States government without compensation, that these landowners had not been told they lived in a floodplain, and that the Corps of Engineers knew that at some time, under some event, the dams would have to be opened up their floodgates, and it would flood these areas. So long before these areas were developed, when these dams were built, it was all just open farmland prairie. The judge said the U.S. government, in building these dams, should at that point in time have gone and bought flood easements for all of these areas that ultimately were flooded by Hurricane Harvey, because the Corps of Engineers knew that if a storm was big enough, they would have to open the floodgates and flood these. In the meantime, in the ensuing 50, 60, 70 years, people moved into all of these areas. There were parks, golf courses, houses, you name it. And at no time did the Corps of Engineers say, we are going to have the possibility of flooding your area. So either you can't build here or there needs to be compensation. So this case is going to have an effect throughout the Mississippi Alluvial Plain, as farmers in particular are going to state that their lands are being taken by the Corps of Engineers because of flooding of their property due to the Corps of Engineers' management of the Mississippi River and tributaries of the Mississippi, that their managing of the water is called mismanagement of the water is causing their properties to flood. So I will deal in this much more next week. I hope to have an individual who's really an expert in this area on the air. But this is a turning point if the Corps of Engineers, i.e. the U.S. taxpayers, are going to be liable for the flooding of cropland and property as a result of the Corps of Engineers. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.